Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Just about once a month, Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyle sits down for a conversation on this program about all things Charlotte. And today, she is here to talk about some city council decisions, the NBA All-Star Game, the BB&T SunTrust merger, and what that may mean for Charlotte, and more as time allows. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Hi, Mike. Happy Valentine's Day to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. And if you would like to join our conversation, email us a Valentine. You can do that at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can get to us on Facebook. You can also get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks, and you can watch the mayor on Facebook Live this morning. The NBA last played the All-Star. I didn't know this. I'd forgotten how long ago it was, but they last played their All-Star game in Charlotte in 1991.
I know.
This was a completely different city back then. I mean, to tell you, am I imagining this? Or when they came here last time, didn't we take Tryon Street and turn it into a make-believe ersatz city?
Yes, pop-up restaurants, tents everywhere, doing all of that. But what I remember most is driving across that bridge on Tivola Road all the way out to the Coliseum. Uh-huh. But I think it was affordable, too. You know, it was kind of one of those things you could get a ticket.
Right, you could get a
and
ticket.
And now today, here we are. Downtown is going to be great. It's just the culmination of so many efforts for this community to host the All-Star Weekend. It goes as far back as having Johnson and Wales come here, we wouldn't have these great restaurants and bars that people are using. The commitment of Michael Jordan to bring the Hornets back, and Fred Whitfield, has the general manager and minority owner, he has been amazing. So we're really proud right now.
Fred was on the program yesterday. Do you know Michael?
I do not know Michael.
Have you never met him?
I have not met Michael Jordan.
He's elusive, isn't he?
Well, I don't know that. I can't describe him. I've never met him.
So. That's why. He's elusive.
Well, you know, I think like people that you meet that have grown up in all of these crowds and grown up with all these admirers, maybe sometimes he's actually decided, I want to step back from that. Yeah. But he's not stepping back this weekend. His team, Kemba Walker, is going to be on the floor, and he'll be in the building.
So I read that this is the biggest sporting event in Charlotte history? Is that really true?
If you read it, it must be true.
Well, no, that doesn't mean no.
Well, I know this. I know that it has a $100 million economic impact.
How do we calculate that?
We calculate that based upon the number of rooms that are booked for the event, the number of restaurants and venues that are leased up for the event, and I understand that every place in downtown is now leased. And so when we talk about there's a formula for jobs that are related to it. So let's just say that you are a trucker and you're bringing in all of these event appliances and furniture and all of that for these venues that are basically a parking lot turned into a living room. Uh-huh. That's an important part of it. It goes from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, and I also read that 150,000 people will be here for this. Is that true?
That is the estimate, that we will have 150,000 people on the streets inside our center city.
Where are you going to put them?
Well, I think
how many is the arena seat?
The arena is right at 19,000.
So 19, what are they coming for? They can't see the game. They can't get
in. Oh, my gosh. It is going to be the best people watching moment that you can have. In other communities, just having, well, Charlotte is big enough to have people come and people watch, and small enough that all of these folks will be out on the street walking around. So I think it's just going to be a great way to see the top fashions, the fanciest automobiles. If you're one of those people that thrives off of, you know, seeing other things happen, you're going to come downtown.
Wow. We did build this ersatz downtown last time. I mean, I want to go back to that because it struck me as humorous then. And I think there are a lot of people who did not live here then.
That's true.
And have no clue about this. But if you went on South Tryon Street from Trade down Tryon Street toward Stonewall, there really wasn't much there back then.
That's true.
Really, there were empty storefronts and things like that. And we plugged in and created bars that were only there for 3 days and restaurants that were only there for 3 days. And it looked like we had a thriving downtown.
And now we have a thriving downtown, do. So don't ever let it be said that our imaginations can't become real.
So what does it say about this city's ability to host major events like this that we have to close schools to accommodate it?
Well, I
think... Because we're closing what? Schools early tomorrow?
We are closing schools early tomorrow. Not all of them, just those
Chantilly,
that are going to be in
Elizabeth,
downtown.
Chantilly-Montessori, let me put this out so people don't get panicked. Chantilly-Montessori, Elizabeth Traditional Elementary, First Ward Elementary, Irwin Academic, and Metro School will all close around 12:30 tomorrow, right?
Right, right. So what this means for us is that we're going to be able to host three major significant events in this season. We're starting with the All-Star Game. We move right into the CIAA tournament and then right into the ACC tournament. That's going to bring a lot of people to our city. My goal always is to think about this as an opportunity to promote what we have here, to encourage workforce talent to come, to encourage businesses to come to Charlotte and see what we can do and how we can grow in a really positive way.
How much bigger is this event than the CIAA?
I think the CIAA economic impact is about $50 million, but that's for a college game. And here we are with the All-Star Game, and we're estimating the economic impact of $100 million. A lot of that I could suppose that would be in the idea that hotels are fully booked in the downtown area and more hotel rooms outside the perimeter of the event. And CIAA, people have already, we've had it now. This is our 13th year that we would be hosting it. And I think that people understand how to maneuver around the city best. Right. So some of the hotels outlying are going to benefit more there.
Maneuvering is going to be a problem beginning, I guess, tonight.
That is not a problem. It is an opportunity that we're taking advantage of.
Politicians.
The
newspaper incorrectly reported yesterday that streets would be closing on Wednesday night. We've been reporting this morning that streets around WFAE have been reporting that streets around the Spectrum Center were already closed this morning. They are not.
They are not.
When
Friday.
Are?
Friday.
They?
You will see those street changes
Friday
will take place
when?
Thursday night, Friday morning.
So tomorrow, people coming downtown to go to work are going to face some challenges. Caldwell and Brevard, mm-hmm. between 4th and 6th, mm-hmm. East Trade and East 5th between College and North Davidson will all be closed.
That's right. That is going to be, there will be detour signs out. We've worked really hard with the, I have to thank Center City Partners for working with the downtown employers to say, this is what's going to be taking place. What do you want your employees to do? And fortunately, with the ability to work from home and a lot of these businesses, they're going to do that. I expect that none of the restaurants are going to be saying work from home. They're going to be bringing in everyone. Hotels will be full. But I think that what we're trying to do, I really say that this is a mini convention.
Well, I was going to ask you, if the closures, the road closures around the arena, are they similar to what we experienced during the Democratic Convention?
You're correct. It is very similar. The epicenter and the transit station, all of those venues are going to be just like we were with the Democratic Convention and what we plan for in 2020 with the Republican Convention.
Is this a dress rehearsal for that?
I would say that if I asked Chief Putney that, he would say yes.
So we have these street closures beginning tonight, mm-hmm. through the weekend, mm-hmm. uptown. We have schools closing at 12:15, I'm told. Mm-hmm. Not all, just the ones that I mentioned, Chantilly Montessori, Elizabeth Traditional, First Ward Elementary, Irwin Academic Center, and the Metro School. And you've moved the transportation center to a parking lot that's across from 7th Street Station. That's effective now, right?
Yes.
You're closing the stop, the Blue Line stop, at the
arena,
and people have to get off traveling in both directions a stop or two early so they can do a security scan of the train, and then they can get back on and pass through the arena area. I have to ask, if this were Madison Square Garden, would they be shutting down the Port Authority and the stop that goes through Madison Square Garden, the subway stop that goes through Madison Square Garden? Why do we have to do this? Isn't it going to be antithetical to what the Blue Line is all about for visitors? They could get right off at the Spectrum Center. What's the problem?
You know, I don't think it's a problem. So you say, well, would they be doing this in Madison Square Garden? What I believe would be, I would say, is Madison Square Garden has events like this all the time.
Yeah.
So what we're doing and seeing is reacting to the safety and security controls that are necessary for us. Every city does something, does a plan to make sure that there is the that visitors and guests will know that they feel safe, and this is our plan. We think this is the right way to make sure that it works.
I know that Homeland Security is here. Are they here to assist with it? Isn't that true? That's what I read. You're looking puzzled.
No, I'm not looking puzzled. I expect that we are having this, as you said, this is kind of a dry run when you okay. think about it, and that we're looking at those opportunities. I know that the Republican convention staff is here, and they're going to be watching and working with our police and the security for the convention so that we can make sure that there are things that we're trying now that will be applicable in 2020.
So this really is a dress rehearsal.
It is a dress rehearsal.
You're also shutting down the streetcar. Why?
Well, one of the reasons for the streetcar shutdown is that it comes right, it changes at the transit center. And so that when the transit center moves, people won't be there to catch the streetcar to go down Trade Street. So I think that that's pretty much a practical kind of answer that we don't need the streetcar if the transit center moves for the transfer.
Do you expect any pushback on all of this? It seems to be terribly inconvenient for a lot of people.
You know, I don't know how we do these things without everybody understanding it. And so when I think about this, I think that the community, the residents of this city, understand the benefits that it's bringing. They understand for the hospitality industry workers that this is going to be a big three-day boost for their salaries and their employment. So Charlotte is one of those cities that gets it. It gets the fact that sometimes 3 days, it might be inconvenience, but we're outside the perimeter, life's going to go on as normal. Inside the perimeter, we're going to have $100 million
impact. I covered the Democratic National Convention in San Francisco at the Moscone Center, and I don't recall them shutting down the any transit. They put fences up around Moscone, and there was a big parking lot at the time near it, and they put a big fence, security fence around that. And getting in and out of the center was incredibly difficult, unless you had a pass, and even then it was hard. But I don't remember tourists around San Francisco having to be denied cable car rides and bus rides and traffic.
Well, we're not denying. We're just moving the location for people to do this so that we can have a safe perimeter. And that's going to be important to us for all of these folks that are coming into the city.
You're also stopping electric scooters and bicycles from passing through the streets around the Spectrum Center. How are you accomplishing that?
Well, I think that we're working with the bike companies and the bike and scooter companies to do that. So they'll be working with us. The whole idea, 150,000 people walking around downtown, we want it to be the best experience that they can have. And sometimes scooters and pedestrians don't quite work. Sometimes.
You don't want to show off these visits. 150,000 people are scooter culture?
I think come from a place where they've seen scooter culture.
Oh, I don't know about that.
That's true.
This is a little out of hand here. Charlotte Mayor Vialiles is with us. There's a lot more to talk about as we go through the hour here. A little bit more about the NBA weekend and about what that means to Charlotte and the state. And also the controversy that kind of reared its head at the city council meeting on Monday about letting people who are not registered voters serve on commissions and boards. We're coming right back to talk about that and more with Mayor Vialiles. Stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's our monthly conversation with Charlotte Mayor Vialiles. I'm beating her up over the NBA All-Star Weekend. I don't mean to be doing that. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, Mike, you can beat me up on all you want, but let me just say that year 20 18 was the best ever for our hospitality industry. We had over 6 million room nights sold,
wow.
782 million in revenues for our hotels, and we actually had 35 million in food and beverage taxes coming back to the city, as well as 63 million in occupancy taxes. So I think we are sacrificing a lot, but we are gaining so much more.
Angela emails, please ask why an effort to clean up the city was not done, especially before the NBA All-Star Weekend. I know the interstates are the state's responsibility, but couldn't we have coordinated a cleanup with them and on a regular basis? I'm not sure what
Anna,
she's
that's
talking
a good
about.
Question. We were just watching a street sweeper.
Go past the
I can say these words, I promise you. Street sweeper come by the studio, and I expect that the downtown and the perimeter area will have a good sweep over the next couple of hours, I expect, you know, maybe within a day. We are striving to deal with this litter issue. And Greg Phipps, one of our council members, says it's time for a war on litter. And I agree with him. We just have to figure out how to do it, because littering is a behavioral issue. It's not a legal issue. We have laws to try to prevent it, but we can't enforce that everywhere. We need to talk about a culture of a clean city and remind ourselves that's what Charlotte is.
I've forgotten the term, but the police department has a term for special situations, special events where you
special
can,
events. Yes.
Okay, so is that invoked this weekend?
We are not invoking that. Actually, we made an amendment not to do that.
Okay.
We took that ordinance, took a strong look at it, and we are not declaring that for events that we can plan for now. I think things have changed since the time that we had that ordinance, and we're moving ahead.
The All-Star Game was supposed to be here a couple of years ago, I think in 2017.
Yeah.
The league pulled it because the legislature passed House Bill 2, HB 2. That law was the source of a lot of frustration and embarrassment for Charlotte and for North Carolina. It caused a lot of cancellations of events. I think not just the NBA All-Star Game, but the ACC pulled events, the NCAA pulled events, some Broadway shows refused to appear at venues around the state. And although it was a state law, the General Assembly passed it in response to what they viewed as an extreme ordinance passed by Charlotte City Council. You were not the mayor.
I was not the mayor
at the time.
But I voted yes for that ordinance.
Okay.
And I still think that ordinance is the right thing to do. But what we have to do in Charlotte is realize that we need to do this as a collaboration and not a standalone. I think that I want to say thanks to Governor Cooper for his brokering this repeal, working with the House and the Senate legislative leadership. We are in a better place. And the NBA All-Star Game is here, mm-hmm. ACC tournament's here. And I want to thank the CIAA for staying with us, even though NCAA, they had opportunities to move just like the ACC did.
So you don't view the ordinance that Charlotte City Council passed that led to the passage of HB2, you do not view that as an extreme liberal agenda move.
No, I believe it is absolutely essential for our economic well-being that we be welcoming to the best talent this community can get. And that the idea of who you are is, to me, something that's your it's not something we're going to measure outside of your home. You are who you are.
Yeah.
And so we want to be a welcoming city. And I think you can see that moving forward. I go to a lot of places, and I think Charlotte has that sense now that we're going to do that, and we're going to be welcoming, and we're just going to wait and test out some things with our ability to produce these large events and encourage more people to come and let them understand.
So HB2, as you alluded to, was repealed, replaced by HB 142. We had a conversation earlier this week with some LGBTQ advocacy groups mm-hmm. who said that the repeal is really a repeal in name only, that nothing much changed from their perspective with 142 in place, and yet everybody came back. The All-Star Game is here. Looking back, you, as you say, it was not an extreme measure that the Charlotte City Council passed, but what do you think it accomplished in the end?
I think it brought attention to the reality of today's our environment.
Okay.
That if we are going to actually continue to grow and bring the best talent, the creative talent, all of that, we can't spend time talking about bathrooms. We have to spend our efforts on putting forth these positive things that can happen in our city that illustrate that we are accepting and welcoming people and that we want diversity in all aspects of it.
It seemed to a lot of people that when the NBA pulled the All-Star game in 2017 and when other leagues pulled their games from North Carolina and from Charlotte, that Charlotte was being unjustly punished for something that they tried to do. We had nothing to do with HB2. And so now they've repealed HB2, replaced it with something else. The NBA is back, and they have mandated in their agreements with the local hospitality industry that all restrooms used for All-Star Game activities, including those at event sites, hotels, and businesses involved with the weekend's All-Star activities, be, quote, open for use by all individuals consistent with their gender identities. That's in their agreements. Why couldn't they have done that in 2017?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know, but I'm just, again, I want to say thanks to the Hornets leadership, thanks to our convention leaders that they came in and they understood that we needed to have these events that put us on a world global stage, mm-hmm. and that those contracts reflect what we want to do and to be able to host these events.
I want to move on away from this, but mm-hmm. I know that House Bill 142, which replaced HB2, has a provision in it mm-hmm. that says local municipalities cannot pass their own non-discrimination ordinances that conflict with the state's non-discrimination policies until December 2020.
That's right.
It sunsets. Now, they may change that, but mm-hmm. right now it's scheduled to sunset. Is Charlotte planning anything as of January 2021?
You know, Mike, when I was out campaigning, I worked really closely with many of the LGBT groups, and this is what I said. I said that sometimes we have to build alliances. So I would have hoped, my hope is that the LGBT communities go out and just like we have MCPAC, they create these other opportunities for everyone to be educated about what's important and that we be able to collaborate across the state, not just to say focus on Charlotte, but to say this is something that we see in our communities and we work together with those organizations and those governing boards, councils or commissioners that want to do this. And if we can have that kind of impact that we go forward with many, many, that makes a difference.
Let's move to a different covfefe, shall we?
Okay.
This involves undocumented immigrants. Charlotte City Council voted on Monday to loosen requirements for advisory boards and committees and allow people who are not registered voters to serve. I didn't know that was a requirement. Why wouldn't unregistered voters be allowed to serve on boards and commissions? Why do you have to be a registered voter?
Oh,
as long as you live in the county and pay taxes.
You know, sometimes making laws, you know that saying about sausage? It is just, it confounds me that this is an issue because we had an application in 2009 and we wanted to make sure that people were residents of the city. So we would just ask them.
Yeah.
But there was no way to verify it. So someone, I don't know who at that time, said, well, we can always check the voter registration and if they're registered.
Stop. Why is there no way to verify it? Well, I just got, what are those new IDs called? Those
driver's licenses.
Speak.
The real ID.
Thank you. The real ID.
Real ID, yes. I don't have one of those yet.
I just got it. And you have to bring in a cable bill or a phone bill or something with your name and address on it. That verifies where you live. Why is that so difficult?
That isn't difficult. It isn't. But at the same time, we have on file applications like by the thousands. And is this the way to, how do we check it when you're coming up? It's actually a self-verification that if you check the box that said you were a registered voter, yes. If you didn't, then it was assumed that you weren't qualified. But this is, I just can't figure out why a mountain came from this molehill.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because what makes this controversial is that some believe that this would open membership on these 35 boards and commissions in the city to undocumented immigrants.
And prior to 2009, that was the same situation. So what did we gain by doing this? These are advisory committees, and often advisory committees that would help us if we had better understanding of what's going on in the entire community come with their expertise. So
and that includes undocumented.
Well, I don't know if undocumented immigrants are going to apply. I think right now, What we're seeing, and I think I saw where the superintendent of schools talked about this, what's going on now, I doubt seriously if we're going to have a lot of undocumented immigrants fill out an application and send it into the city of Charlotte to serve on an advisory board that they would actually have to spend their free time working on. It seems to me that we've taken an issue and blown it up to meet certain needs of we, they, and I'm never going to go in that direction with us. We're going to try to serve this community as a whole.
The two Republicans on council, Ed Riggs and Tariq Bakari, voted against this move. Did they vote against it for similar reasons, or do they each have their own reasons? Or do you remember?
I can't speak to you. I try not to. I saw that a lot of people think, well, this is going to impact our legislative relationships. Well,
Tariq wrote an editorial.
And he
wrote,
he said that. And my feeling is, if that's what breaks our relationships, we're in sad shape. We are building relationships, and people have to understand that there are some things in Charlotte that we're going to do. And I think that the more that we emphasize the negative, the more the growth of the negative tone starts, and that's just not where we need
to be. Well, Tariq said that we have to recognize the world we exist in. Our vote doesn't make ICE go away. Our vote doesn't make, meaning city council's vote, doesn't make the General Assembly, controlled by Republicans, go away. That sounds like he's aware that there might be threats coming our way.
That sounds like he is Republican and in getting ready for an election.
Okay. Ed Driggs said he had no problem with allowing those who hadn't registered to vote to serve on boards and commissions, but that the city should still require that they be legal residents. Wouldn't that be a good requirement to have in?
And how would we verify that?
Name and address on a phone bill.
Well, we do this by technology. What are we going to have, photo scanning of everybody's phone bill? And then what phone bill do we talk? My son has a phone bill that says he's got a 911 area code. He lives in Charlotte. He got that while he was in Durham in school.
Well, then don't use a phone. Use something that ties you to a residence.
You know, there are lots of governments that try to do this, and they end up creating bureaucracies to check something that I have to ask, is that the value-added proposition?
But don't we require that certain employees live in the city?
I don't believe that we do.
Police officers are not
required to live in the city.
All right. In a letter to the editor in The Observer this week, one writer, referring to council's decision to allow unregistered voters to serve on commissions and boards, said that our city, quote, just legitimized living here illegally. I'm not sure how you define sanctuary city, but I think Charlotte just became one.
Well, that's true. None of us know how to define sanctuary city. Sanctuary city is a word or term that's thrown around all kinds of different ways. And if that reader or writer thought that this would make us a sanctuary city, his definition is that people that are not registered voters shouldn't be living here. I just don't understand that.
So meanwhile, Democratic City Council members Braxton Winston and Larkin Eggleston questioned whether CMPD should have held traffic checkpoint stops on the same day as a federal immigration roundup by ICE here and around the state. I think they rounded up, 200 people around the state, 12 here in Charlotte?
That's what the news reported.
Was CMPD aware that ICE was doing this on the same day that they were doing their traffic stops, which are regularly scheduled events?
I would like to, as mayor, reassure this community that CMPD believes that we have to have the cooperation of every citizen to be effective to stop crime before it happens, and they do not coordinate with ICE. And I understand, again, people are very passionate over this issue, but the reality of it is that we do not do coordination with ICE. We actually are working very hard to get a listening session so that people can come in and tell us about their apprehensions and to look at what services we provide that people may be afraid to access because of this national dialogue.
Wouldn't they be afraid to attend that meeting?
I think
ICE
we go where
there?
People are, and that doesn't mean that we're not going to send out a notice saying, please come. I mean, we're going to go where people are and talk to them. They have meetings and groups of associations. We're going to start with the immigrant business community. A lot of the folks that are, document it, and they have businesses, and we're just going to go and talk to them and say, what's standing in the way of people getting access to city services? Because that's what we want. We want people who are paying taxes to access those services.
Greg on Twitter asks, what actions can the city take to protect residents from ICE? Is that the city's job to protect residents from ICE?
No, and it's a very tough position because, you know, it's, all politics are local, except most of these things that are happening are by federal action. We have no ability to coordinate, activate, encourage, or discourage the ICE raids because those are directed out of Homeland Security.
But Gary McFadden, our sheriff, our new sheriff, ended his department's cooperation with ICE using 287G, the program that allowed them to ask residents of the jail, are you here legally? And if they said no, they would turn them over to ICE. That's over. That stopped.
That stopped, and along with Wake County Sheriff and Durham County Sheriff.
And when it stopped here, when that announcement was made, somebody in the Homeland Security field office in Atlanta said, well, I guess we'll just have to up the ICE raids or be more surveillant in Charlotte.
Is that what happened? I think that statement's regrettable if that's what they think helps us accomplish good government.
But is that what happened this week?
I can't speak to what ICE decided to do, and we can't. I mean, ICE is going to do what they're directed to do from the federal Homeland Security folks.
And both Gary McFadden and CMPD Chief Kirk Putney say these things are counterproductive to public safety.
We all believe that. I think we've heard the chief well enough say that we have to make sure that the citizens or residents here are safe, and if they don't feel like they can call police because there's some consequence that we can't control, that's not a good situation for our city.
Yeah. Councilman James Mitchell said, I don't like when national platforms are played out in our community. If you're going to take that narrative on a federal level, run for those positions. What did he mean by that?
I think he meant we've been meeting since 5 o'clock, and it's 10:30 p.m. at night, and I'm just a little bit tired.
In other words, talk about city business. Don't talk about
federal
business.
I think that's exactly what
business.
He was saying.
The council did something very surprising this week, which I want to talk about.
What's
when
that?
We come back and find out if you thought it was as surprising, because I just about fell off my – I spilled my Cheerios when I read it in the paper. And that's the fact that they decided to go to stick with two-year terms. That's a surprise. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the BB&T SunTrust merger and what that may mean for Charlotte going forward, and a few other things as well with Mayor Vi Lyles when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, sitting here in our Spirit Square studio with Mayor Vi Lyles in advance of the NBA All-Star Game, which the weekend begins tomorrow. And this week at City Council, a decision was made not to pursue four-year terms for City Council and Mayor. Was that a surprise to you?
It was a surprise. The final vote was a surprise. I think the conversation at the dais was very healthy, and I think that a lot of people were planning on voting one way. I don't know who changed their minds, but this is what I said, is that when we have government changes like this, just like in district representation change, it was the citizens that came to us. And that when they came and asked for that change. We must engage the citizens. It's interesting to me, we talk about transparency. To me, transparency means that you give the citizens the opportunity to make those decisions and you accept them. It's not a decision
should
be made.
Wasn't the vote going to be on whether to take this to a referendum?
That was the vote that was proposed. There are methods that we can make these changes in your governmental structure, and that was the vote that was recommended by the committee.
I mean, I read somewhere I think it was Ed Driggs, Republican Ed Driggs, who said this consistently polls 2-1 against. Is that why it didn't go to referendum? Because they just assumed it would be voted down, so why bother? We'll just stick with what we got?
That may have influenced some. I think the major influences were we didn't have citizens asking for it. Two, we had no time to talk to citizens about what they would want and what other changes. And finally, I think the census in 2020 will come, and we will be redrawing our district boundaries. So if there's a time to change government, let's put it as a comprehensive package before the voters and let the voters bring that forward. But there will be changes after the census. We haven't done our districts in 10 years, and so after the census, we'll be looking at how district populations have changed, and I expect we'll have some line and precinct changes coming very quickly.
Why do you think the public is lukewarm on this idea of four-year terms for council members, staggered though they may be?
I don't know that, and they're not staggered terms. Everybody's all at one time.
But they would be, wouldn't they?
They would be staggered. It would be more like that. I think the proposal was mayor and at-large run, and that districts run in separate election years. I don't know if the public is lukewarm. I think the city at this point, we've got a certain momentum going. I think a real positive outlook right now. And maybe they're like, well, that's not that they're why do anything now? It's going well. Let's continue. But when you're on the inside, you do understand that campaigning is a lot of work. I do believe that four-year terms would give people a longer time to dive into issues, to make our plans become real. Think about the general land use plan that we're working on now.
Yeah.
That is going to be something that will probably take years to develop, and having that consistency is a good idea.
One of the things that has come out of this new council is that there's a lot of new blood. It came onto council in the last election, a lot of very young people, and we joked about it, but it's true. And you and others on council, these newcomers, said the time for talk is over, the time for action is now. If you serve four-year terms, do you have a longer timeline? So maybe you don't get as much done as quickly. Would that be counterproductive to what the kind of energy that this new council brought into play?
I think it's a lot deeper than that. You know, when I came to Charlotte, large companies would say, this is really something to connect to public service. And they could give up someone that perhaps wanted to serve the public but also have a job. And 2 years might be workable. But the times have changed. Every employee is valued inside their own institution. So the ability for us to serve and grow, I think 4-year terms may give more stability to people willing to serve longer. And I think that's a good thing. I think we're looking for people that want to do this as community service.
So Charlotte will soon become home to the nation's sixth largest bank when BB&T merges with SunTrust. Mm-hmm. That will make this city once again, we're on this teeter-totter here, but once again, I think we'll become the second largest bank.
Or stronger second. I think we're already number two, but we're going to be stronger.
Did we not lose that to San Francisco?
We did not lose that.
All right, so we're going to be a stronger number two banking center. BB&T is out of Winston-Salem. SunTrust is out of Atlanta. Both banks chose Charlotte, neutral territory, to headquarter this new bank, which is as yet unnamed. And they did so with no recruiting effort whatsoever on the part of the city and no incentives of any kind being offered by the city. What does that tell you about incentives and about the need to recruit businesses to Charlotte when they just drop out of the sky and come here voluntarily on their own?
Oh, I wish it were that simple that they just dropped out of the sky and they came. But I got a call at 5:55 from a BB&T board member who said, we're just announcing it's going out at 6 a.m. Can you have lunch with us at 11:30? And they invited the city council and the county commission. I want to say to SunTrust CEO Bill Rogers and Kelly King, BB&T CEO, that they had a very deliberative process by which they knew that they wanted to make a stronger bank and to be six instead of being, I believe, at the time somewhere around 17th and 18th, that to be able to survive. And I think this speaks to the changes in automation for banking and the way, just think, no checkbooks and all of those things are coming. And they are building a technology foundation for their financial security.
I mean, I know this happened really quickly. Mm-hmm. At least it seemed to happen really quickly.
Well, the announcement was definitely.
But they didn't come and ask for anything. They didn't. Did they talk? They didn't talk to you or anybody else before they decided this, right?
Not that I'm aware of, but I do have to say, when we had the lunch with the two CEOs, both of them talked about they were bringing two healthy organizations to a merger of equals.
Yeah, well, Amazon's a healthy organization. Look what they asked for.
Yeah, that's why that they're not. Okay, you got me on that one. Okay, let me start back again on here. You know, I'm just going to say that, you know, there are incentives necessary for some businesses. Yes, I would hope that we wouldn't that we would look at this as a win for everyone. But they still have a couple of years to go out, and they are going to have to do something differently. The BB&T building that we have downtown, I think that they're looking at something that's going to be different that would merge the two industries. But the most important thing that they said is that we were chosen for the headquarters. But they're going to continue to be strong in Winston-Salem.
Right.
They're going to continue to be strong in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So I look at this as a way that we have colleagues working together in a triangle, geographic triangle, that perhaps those incentives weren't necessary. We weren't moving people. We weren't trying to acquire new land. We weren't trying to do some of those things. And I'm just really glad that they opened this debate about incentives and what's necessary.
So what do you anticipate this will mean for Charlotte? I mean, will this because when two organizations come together, particularly when they have an overlapping footprint like SunTrust and BB&T. Some of them have branches within 2 miles of each other. There's going to be some consolidation, and it's all about technology. It's about ramping up their technological footprint. Are we going to see a loss of jobs or a net gain of jobs? And the jobs that are coming here in a headquarters situation, will they be higher paying than the jobs that already exist here for SunTrust and BB&T, or do you know?
I think that what Bill and Kelly were saying is that this is a long process. They announced it so that it wouldn't be something that they were working on in absence, because they both have to go to one bank has to go to the state charter and one has to go to the federal charter. So these are going to be conversations where they're going to be applying for federal and state changes in their charters. So it was going to become open, but they also said they were going to do it deliberatively, and 2 years would take that time. And at the end of those 2 years, we'll know more.
So Amazon, I'm going back. Amazon chose not to come here because they said we didn't have enough tech talent.
Mm-hmm.
BB&T and SunTrust are coming here because of our fintech talent, mm-hmm. which is what they want. We have it. So now Amazon is reconsidering moving to New York City because they're getting a lot of blowback from New York City.
Wow.
They don't want them there. The people in New York don't want them. So they're thinking about rethinking this decision. When they look at these two banks coming together because of our tech talent, will that maybe cause them to reconsider us?
I have no idea, but I do want you to know that I went out to the Amazon Fulfillment Center.
Uh-huh.
And I met their HR person, Michelle. Good morning. I hope you're listening to this. Because we have three facilities out off of close to the airport where they have thousands of people working. And so I think that Amazon is having a presence in Charlotte, whether it's the recruitment of all of these businesses or not. They're making investments in the city. And what they are looking for are people that will come in. It's 24/7 day operation.
Yeah.
Shipping packages is a lot of hard work, and we have a presence with Amazon, and I think that those jobs are really important because they are jobs where you enter in an entry level and you have opportunities to grow into those kinds of salaries that we all admire and wish that we had.
Now, I know that BB&T has its name on the Knights ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if SunTrust has their name on anything locally.
I don't know the answer to that.
But do you know if they will continue to be the naming sponsor of the ballpark, whatever the new name may be?
I know that BB&T has a strong relationship with minor league baseball,
okay.
And I don't know what will happen, but I think that they've done this in a number of stadiums around our state, and we'll just have to wait and see what they decide. It's a private sector decision. I'm not going to second guess their ability to do that.
We have spoken with you, and last month you couldn't make it to this program. That's okay. it's all right. We survived.
I think I heard the Mayor Pro Tem, Julie Eisel, did a fantastic job. You probably were glad to have her.
She felt like she was walking on eggshells because she didn't want to upstage you, but she was great. But we spoke with both of you about the shocking discovery that the Cross Charlotte Trail Project, originally budgeted at $38 million, is experiencing a $77 million shortfall. So we talked about how this happened due to old, no longer used, insufficient budgeting practices on the part of city staff. But has the city and or the county decided what they're going to do about this?
I think that's an overly simplistic reply to it, to say it was budgeting practices. In 2012, when this thing happened, we had, I think since then, we had Harry Jones and Kurt Walton. Harry was gone. And
Harry's with the county.
With the county. And Kurt resigned and went to started doing other things. In that same time period, we've had 6 mayors, 3 city councils. And to say that the Cross Charlotte Trail was the only issue because of budgeting, it wasn't. I think that what we embarked upon in 2012 was the idea that we could do some big changes, that we were going to address some of the disparities in our community. Goal Line being one of them, the Joint Communications Center being another one, the Cross Charlotte Trail being another one. At the time that I came to the council, we had to put additional money into the Goal Line. We were beginning a discussion around the Joint Communications Center. The trail was mentioned last year in our budget deliberations, but we didn't have an answer for it. If you really step back, it's easy to say poor budgeting problems or whatever, but I think it was really a question of a series of unfortunate events and circumstances. Having that leadership stability is really important in a community, and we didn't have that for a long time.
Did you just make an argument for 4-year terms?
I was thinking that as I was saying that, and I was wondering if I was. I don't know if it's 4-year terms, but I think the professional leadership is just as important as the elected leadership. And when you have a disconnect between those two, mm-hmm. things fall apart.
How many other projects might suffer a similar fate? Do you have any idea?
I think that between the Goal Line, the Joint Communications Center, and the trail, we've basically cover the large ones. There are going to be some changes that we'll have to have because our growing population. Our new fire chief is now asking for 3 bay stations because of the density in the community. If you got the engine out, you need an engine waiting. Mm-hmm. So 3 bay fire stations will be one. I also think that there are 2 other factors. The land values in Charlotte have really increased, almost doubled it seems. And so when we're going out building those police stations that we want to have located throughout the city, doing the looking and assessing what we thought the per square footage acquisition was, it's almost double. So we're going to have to constantly deal with change. It's just what we're doing.
Some people the Cross Charlotte Trail was approved in a bond issue. Voters said yes to it.
Yes.
A lot of voters who said yes to it live in areas that will now suffer because we don't have the money to complete it. What impact do you think that will have on future bond issues? I mean, I voted for something, I'm not getting it.
Well, this is what I would say. You voted for something, and we're going to provide it. We're going to start planning the phase to the north in this upcoming year's budget. We have a commitment to do the plan and the design. And then we'll have to figure out, with all of the activities and priorities, where does it fit? And I think there's truly a commitment by the council to make sure it happens. But we have to have good estimates to do it.
Very quickly, Katie on Facebook, can the mayor comment on the Observer story about the city council having the most expensive retreat of all the local boards that went out of town for planning retreats, $58,000 to go to the Renaissance Hotel in Raleigh?
And to go to the state legislators' dinner, to meet with the governor, to go visit the state representatives and senators afterwards. I think that those investments are good investments. Most corporate businesses, and we're not corporate, we're government, need to have the ability to focus in on what we're trying to do. The retreat ended up with us having 3 priorities: transportation and land use, healthy and safe neighborhoods, and economic development with workforce talent. I think that the value added for that ability to focus that tightly and be able to think seriously about how to deliver is an important investment.
I want to leave you with this, because Brad Crone, writing in something called NC Spin, thinks you're a rising star because of what you've been able to do in Raleigh. He says that usually Raleigh views us as the great state of Mecklenburg, and that you are an unknown political figure outside of Charlotte. So when you appeared at the recent transportation summit in Raleigh, expectations were low, but when you left the building, there was a new realization that Vi Lyles was the real deal. And he finished his column by saying that if you decide to run for governor in 2024, you would be very hard to beat.
I'm running for mayor. I am running for mayor this fall for Charlotte.
And with that, we'll let you go. Thank you very much for the time, Mayor Vi Lyles. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.